What's up, everyone? It's Michael Scotto, HoopsHype.com's NBA writer and host of the Hoops Hype podcast. We've now passed the one-year anniversary of Kobe Bryant's death, as we're a month into the NBA season, and the start of the G League bubble season is approaching in February as well. With that in mind, Brian Shaw, one of Kobe's teammates on the Lakers during their three-peat, Kobe's assistant coach for two more titles under Phil Jackson, and the current head coach of the G League Ignite, joins me as a guest on the pod. Shaw discussed his favorite memories with Kobe behind the scenes and which draft picks on the Ignite are projected lottery picks to keep an eye on for the upcoming draft class. Coming up next. Brian, I appreciate you joining us here on the Hoops Hype podcast as you get ready for the G League bubble coming up soon with the Ignite. The first question I want to ask you was, as you get ready for the bubble, how are you going to try to keep these elite prospects and these teenagers sane as they get ready to get on lockdown, almost in a sense, going in this bubble?
Well, they've gotten good practice at it up to this point. I mean, we've been in our own little kind of mini bubble out here in Walnut Creek since the end of August. And, they understand, what's going on and the importance of following protocols and, handling their business when it comes to that sort of thing. So I'm not too worried about that. If anything, it'll be nice to have a change of scenery, being out in Florida. And, the weather's been nice here, but obviously, it's usually a lot warmer there. They'll have a few more things that they'll be able to do, hopefully, around the property that we'll be staying at.
And as I touched on, you do have some elite prospects on this roster as you look to develop their talent. One of those guys, obviously, being Jalen Green. I was curious from your perspective in working with him so far. He's gotten a lot of hype and buzz as a potential draft pick in the upcoming draft. What do you see in his game that makes him worthy of that hype, and what could he become down the line?
Well, in terms of what he could become, the sky's the limit. And I mean that because, for such a young player, he has, I've been around some very, very good players, in my over 32 years being around and in the NBA. And the special ones have something in common in terms of the way that they approach the game, the work ethic, confidence that they play with, and their desire to be great and to consistently be great by putting in the work. And so he embodies all of those qualities. He has effortless athleticism on top of that. And we're trying to instill and put into place the footwork and the fundamentals and the things that will be his foundation going forward. And I think with the combination of that, along with his just God-given talent and ability athletically, as well as his ability to, he has a knack for just being able to score the ball at every different level, from the three-point line, mid-range game. He can post up, even though he has a slight build, but a great slasher, can get to the rim and finish with contact or over contact. And, he's pretty, all of our young guys and most young guys across the board, the areas that they struggle with mostly are on the defensive end. And so, the more experience that he gets, understanding terminology, the physicality of the the game at the next level, and the speed of the game, and just learning how to negotiate in the pick and roll game and chasing shooters off of staggered screens and things of that nature. I mean, those are areas that he's going to have to definitely, continue to get better at, and as well as, developing his strength. But that'll come, with time, and he's, like I said, very willing to put in the work. And so that's encouraging, as a coach, when you have a player that's eager to, to learn and get better. And on top of that is willing to put in the work and doesn't shy away from it.
Pretty decent high praise for the young man, considering some of the guys you've played with in your career, thinking back to those Orlando Magic days with Shaq, and then you guys rejoined together in LA and you played with Kobe as well. Certainly a young man to look out for. Another young guy to keep an eye on is someone actually that we profiled on hoopsype.com. My colleague Brian Kalbrowski wrote about him, Jonathan Kuminga. Definitely wanted to get your thoughts on him as well. Similarly to Jalen Green, what has impressed you about his game now as a guy that could be a potential draft pick next year as well? And in terms of coaching him, what do you see for him?
Yeah, so, Jonathan is special as well. Right away when I, immediately when I first was around him on the court, the person that came to mind that he reminded me of the most was Jaylen Brown of the Celtics. And, being from the Bay Area, up here in Oakland, I got to see Jaylen play when he was at Jaylen Brown play when he was at Cal. I also did his draft workout when he worked out for us when I was with the Lakers. We had taken the Brandon Ingram with the second pick. I think Jaylen went third to the Celtics. And then one of my assistant coaches here, Chris Farr, worked Jaylen out, as he was preparing for the draft. And, just the body type, very mature for his age, just strong, athletic. And I think the best part of his game, which is not the most glorious by any means, is on the defensive end. He's a guy that can defend one, twos, threes, and fours, has the strength to even, if he switched on to a power forward, he has the strength to be able to hold a bigger guy off, but has the foot speed and the tenacity to also dominate on the defensive end as well. And then, I've shown him film of Jalen Green and where Jalen Brown, excuse me, and where he started to where he is now in the short, 4 years or whatever that he's been in the NBA. And he, right now is playing at such a high level, Jalen Brown is, and plays at every level, once again on the offensive side. And I think that Kuminga has the potential to do that exact same thing, stretch the defense out and hit from distance, great mid-range game, strong and can post up, definitely can finish through contact and put pressure on the defense, attacking the rim. But just being, so on the offensive side, being able to play at every level. And then, he's really, really special on the defensive end. And I think will be one of the better two-way players in the league. And, having watched Jaylen Brown, having coached Paul George, and, his game isn't like Paul George, but in terms of Paul George's ability on the offensive end and the defensive end, being one of the best two-way players in the league, just having the ability to talk to him about how important that is and how valuable that is, to a team to have a guy that can guard multiple positions and, as well as score the ball. And in our two scrimmages, that we've had against G League teams up to this point, he's been our leading scorer and he's been very, very efficient. The first game, he had 26 points on 11 for 15 shooting. Second game, he led us with 22 points. I think 8 for 15 from the field, and so just, you know, very efficient, and already is physically ready. His body is, you know, has the body of a man and is physically ready for that next level.
Jaylen Brown's a heck of a comparison for a young man. I remember watching Jaylen when he was in the Jordan Brand Classic scrimmages when they would be here in Brooklyn. You could see the talent in him then. So for Jonathan, that's high praise as well. You know, you touched on a comparison for him. I wanted to just go back to Jaylen for a second. Jaylen Green, do you have a comparison for him?
No, you know, his game is more unique. I've sent him, I've watched each guy here. I kind of send clips of different guys that I want them to just kind of study their game and pick certain aspects of their game. And what I've done is with Jaylen, I've sent him video clips and sat with him and watched Penny Hardaway, Kobe, Paul George. And I think I'm going to also show him some footage of Bradley Beal. To me, he has, even though his body type is not like Bradley Beal, the ways in which he scores the ball are kind of similar to that. But he has more of a body of a young Penny Hardaway that I, you know, played with in Orlando for 3 years, and. You know, he's not the playmaker and facilitator like Penny Hardaway does, but in terms of that athleticism and the length and the way he attacks on offense reminds me a little bit of his game. But I think he's, you know, I can definitely see like Jaylen Brown in Kuminga. When it comes to Jaylen Green, you know, there's not really anybody that I could say, oh yeah, that's, you know, that's what it's going to look like for him. I think he has a unique game.
Nothing wrong with that. Certainly, you know, one day down the line, people are going to want to maybe be compared to being the next Jaylen Green. You got to be the first at some point. So
That's right.
Two other young guys that you have on the roster that, you know, that are on the NBA radar as well down the line, Isaiah Todd and Kai Soto. I was curious your impressions of them thus far as well, and you know, their ceilings, and if you had any player comparisons for both of those young men.
Not really comparisons. Isaiah Todd is, I think, under the radar. I hope that, you know, the guys aren't really paying too much attention to the mock drafts and things of that nature. And there's been a lot of them that I haven't seen his name on at all. And I can't imagine that there would be 30 to 60 guys that are better than him. When you watch him and his skill set as a 6'9", almost 6'10", young player that, can hand, you know, I bring him down and do the workouts with him with the guards, because he can do all the guard skills in terms of the ball handling, step backs, you know, 3-point shot, off the dribble, things of that nature. You know, he has length, and, you know, so one of the areas that he has to get stronger, as they all do, to understand the physicality of the game. I think that when the executives that have to make the decisions on who their organizations are going to draft, when they get a chance to see him in a workout, they're going to be impressed. You know, so I've sat with him. I kind of talked about, and he's different, but I talked about Jeremy Grant. Showed him film the other night of Jeremy Grant, and not that their games are similar, but how Jeremy Grant went 39th in the draft 5 or 6 years ago when he came in the league by Philadelphia. When he came in the league, he was just basically known as a, you know, he was a long, athletic guy that could really, really run the lane, played with a lot of energy, was more of known for the defensive side of the ball, and not very much on the offensive end. And, you know, going from averaging 5 points and then just steadily improving up to last year when he averaged 12 points for the Denver Nuggets, became a starter and also their defensive stopper. And then, you know, becoming a free agent and signing for $84 million, I believe it was, with the Detroit Pistons, and now being a starter and actually a feature player that they feature on the offensive end even before Blake Griffin, and, you know, in the games that I've seen. And, you know, I think he's leading them in scoring and averaging a little under 25 points a game. And also was very efficient last year when he was with Denver from the 3-point line. And so that's something that I think that Isaiah can do with his skill set. And I think he's already ahead of where
Jeremy was.
Yeah, where Jeremy was on the offensive end. That they're not, it's not an exact comparison, but you know what I think he can grow into and how Jeremy's put in that work and become, you know, the type of player that he has. The other guy, Dacian Nix, is pretty impressive in terms of a player with his size and ability at the point guard position, and a guy that I call a gamer in terms of, you know, you may see him in a workout and just kind of be like, you know, I don't know. But then when you see him playing a game, the way that he puts pressure on the defense, pushing the ball, passing the ball, setting up his teammates, and then the physicality that he plays with because he has a big body, you know, and these guys will get a chance to show that, you know, in just a few weeks when they're playing against the best competition that they're going to will have played against up to this point. So I'm excited about them, you know, getting out there and having a chance to show what they can do. And I just don't want people to think like, oh, you know, this is, you know, for us, our team is pretty different in terms of, you know, being a G League team. We're not really a G League team. It's a completely different program. So for us, it's not necessarily about, you know, going to the bubble and winning and losing. It's just about getting these players better, teaching them how to be pros on and off the court. You know, that their overall development. And that's what we've been about since we got started back in August.
You touched on that differential between you guys and the other G League teams with more seasoned guys that have been in the league even. For you, I was curious from your standpoint, why a top high school prospect should consider the G League maybe instead of college. This is the first year where it really seems like a lot of the bigger name prospects really gave it some consideration.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that, I mean, obviously, you know, I went to college. I had a great time. It was, you know, some of the best days of my life with my experiences that I had in college. And I think that there's, you know, but college isn't for everybody. And if you're an elite prospect that was most likely only going to go to college for a year and be one and done, why not? And like I said, in school, you know, wasn't necessarily a thing. If you're going to be playing basketball and training to try to get to that next level and you are identified as one of these elite prospects, I think it's a great alternative and something that should be explored more. And it's not like anybody can just come and be a part of this. You have to, you know, these guys that we have were hand selected by Sharif Abdul-Rahim and Rod Strickland. to be part of this pilot program. And, you know, you get to train. You're surrounded by staff that has been on NBA, you know, part of NBA teams, from our trainer, strength and conditioning coach, from our assistant coaches to myself, as well as Rod Strickland and Sharif Abdul-Rahim, the president of the G League, that they can lean on and spend the majority of the time, like I said, preparing. You don't have to go to class. You're getting paid a pretty significant salary. You know, if you choose the college route, unless you're getting, you know, paid illegally, you're not in that same category in terms of being compensated for what you're doing on a daily basis. And so that's preparing you for, you know, for what's coming next, and giving you a jump start on how, you know, the business of basketball. And, you know, much like a lot of international players that you know, go to academies and things of that nature and play professional ball from their teenage years on, they have an opportunity to do that and just really, really concentrate on the game. But at the same time, you know, they take courses and things every day, from financial literacy to mental health, to death and dying, to the business of basketball, and are talking to professionals in all of those fields. And then on top of that, what most people don't know is once you come through this program, you make it professionally, regardless of how long your professional career is. The day that your career ends professionally, you have 5 years to allow us to pay for 4 years of college through a program at Arizona State. And so when you look at that, the fact that you can, you know, you're hooping and you are preparing for the next level, you don't have to go to class, you're getting paid significantly, and you still get school paid for once it's all said and done, if you choose to, you know, that to me, and if you're, you know, let me preface it again by saying, if you're one of those elite guys that was going to probably only be in school for a year anyway, I don't know how you can really beat that.
That's a good, I wouldn't call it a sales pitch, but it's a good way to look at it, under those circumstances. That also said, obviously you're returning to the sidelines and getting to coach these young guys. I was curious for you personally, you know, being an NBA head coach again, or maybe making a transition to the college game and being a coach there, is that something you thought of personally for yourself?
I mean, you know, I've thought about it, but it's not really something that's burning in me, you know, at this point. I feel very fortunate to be in this position. One, you know, I'm 54 years old now. I'm living in my house here in Oakland that I have not been able to live in, you know, basically other than the summer months in the off season for the last 30 years. So I'm able to live and work out of my house. You know, it's a 15-20 minute drive to work every day, which is, you know, that's worth its weight in gold. You know, when you have family and elderly family members that you need to be around and take care of. I'm still doing what I love to do, which is coach basketball and impact young men, and trying to provide the blueprint for them to get to the level that they want to get to. And, you know, as a coach up before this, you know, having been on staffs that, you know, we've had high draft picks that have come straight out of high school. And then once that rule changed, you know, have a lot of guys that have been 1 year removed from high school. A lot of them come in and as athletically talented as they are, still don't really understand how to play, and they're not ready. not just on the basketball court, but just mentally and socially and every other way. And so I want to be able to impact these young men in a way that whoever gets them next year when they when they're drafted will say, wow, these guys were a lot more prepared than some of the young draft picks in the past, because they've been exposed to not only the terminology of the NBA game, but just the whole lifestyle. And like I said, the routine that, you know, we want them to develop, and is understanding what it takes to be a pro.
You talk about learning to be a pro, you know, by the time you got to Orlando, you had a younger Shaquille O'Neal. And then when you were with the Lakers, Kobe was still a younger guy overall, entering his peak. And as you know, we come up on his anniversary. You know, I had a touch on it with you, and I know you had a very emotional interview when it happened. I believe it was even on NBA TV at the time, when you were talking about Kobe. You know, we're all thinking of him as the anniversary comes up. There was a story once that I think it was about maybe 15 years ago or whenever Kobe outscored the Mavericks 62-61 after the three quarters, that you asked him if he wanted to play the fourth and get 70. And he said, I'll do it when we really need it. Did that happen?
Oh yeah. Yeah, that happened. So at the end of the third quarter, we were in our coach's huddle out on the floor. The players were sitting on the bench, resting. I think we had like a 33 point lead. And Phil Jackson sent me over to ask Kobe if he wanted to stay in for the first few minutes of the fourth. And you know, see if he can get 70. And so I went over and asked him, and he looked up at the scoreboard. Like I said, we were up 30 or 33, something like that. He said, nah, I'll do it another time when we really need it. And so I got mad at him because, you know, I played with him and you know, I was like, man, what are you talking about? You got a chance to get to score 70 points. How many people can say that they scored 70 in an NBA game? And he looked up at the scoreboard again. And he was like, we don't need it right now. I'll get it another time. And it was probably 3 weeks later, 4 weeks later.
Mm-hmm.
We played the Toronto Raptors when he had 81, and we needed all of those. It was a, you know, close game all the way down to, I mean, you know, we were actually down a lot of that game, and kind of pulled away a little bit at the end. But, you know, where I saw him score 81 points, and that's the first thing that came to my mind was, you know what, he told me 3 weeks ago that he was going to do it when we really needed it. And not only did he get score 70, but it was 81. So, special moment.
Well, you mentioned that it was a special moment. You could probably pick from a number of them, whether it's being his teammate or being his coach, as you mentioned, with that staff and Phil Jackson. For you, what were the most memorable stories for Kobe Bryant, whether it was as a teammate or coaching him?
There's a couple, and they weren't all really sort of, you know, basketball great highlight moments, but I mean, obviously seeing him score 81, seeing him in a game where he had an injured right shoulder, and he pretty much played, I think he scored 37 or 40 points pretty much, playing most of the game left-handed, not using his right hand at all, because his shoulder was banged up pretty good. And just the incredible, the mindset that you have to have, knowing that you can't use one side of your body basically, but you still want to be out there with your teammates. You know, so while I'm on the subject of mindset, one of the most impressive things was when he actually tore his Achilles. And he got up and he shot his free throws and then he walked off the court on his under his own strength, you know, with the ruptured Achilles. And you know, I've seen guys get wheeled off the court in wheelchairs. We played the Boston Celtics in 2008 in the finals. Paul Pierce went down. They wheeled him off with an apparent knee injury. They wheeled him off the court in a wheelchair. He came back and after a minute and 51 seconds later, and finished the game and hit like 3 3-pointers in a row. But my point is that he got carried off in a wheelchair and was able to come back. Kobe walked off, shot his free throws and walked off the court with a ruptured Achilles. And so he, you know, I've seen him, like, he has the highest threshold, had the highest threshold for pain of anyone that I had ever seen. And I would say probably lastly, you know, I was at his last game as a spectator. The Lakers brought in all of his ex-teammates. And to see him, you know, I was sitting up in the stands with Gary, sitting with Gary Payton and Horace Grant. And we were kind of joking and betting on how many shots we thought he would take, how many points he would score. And I remember he missed his first 5 shots to start the game out. And we just laughed and said, well, we all know that that's not going to slow him down. He's going to keep firing away. And in your last game, when you're about to retire to score 60 points in a win, was pretty incredible as well.
Anything about him too, you know, I've pulled some other guys for a story I'm working on about him, other teammates like Robert Sacre, Jody Meeks, and some other coaches, you know, Melvin Hunt. And some of the stories are pretty funny. You know, one I remember with Sacre was him asking him for a beer after the game when he knew that he would always take a six pack with him on the bus. Any of those interactions that are, whether it was a practice on a bus or the plane, that stuck out to you, maybe playing a game. I heard he was a mean checkers player. Very methodical with his moves. Some interesting insight that maybe, you know, the Kobe Bryant fan wouldn't have seen with, you know, from not watching him on TV, something behind the scenes, maybe.
Well, he was a staunch rap and hip hop fan. And I would say, you know, especially when I first joined the Lakers, when he was still young, he couldn't do a lot of things that the rest of the guys on the team could do because of his age. He wasn't 21. You know, he couldn't go out to a club or to a bar and have a drink after a game. When we would be on the plane, you know, playing cards, he would kind of sit in his own section by himself. Didn't really engage in any of the card games with us. And so you could, you know, you would initially think, oh, he's kind of standoffish. But when you look back at it, it was like he couldn't do a lot of things. You know, he was still, you know, a teenager and a young man that wasn't of age around a bunch of grown men. And so while he would be in this corner on the plane or on the bus, he would always have his headphones on. He's always listening to music or he was watching film. But he had the ability to listen to a song and remember and recite word for word from beginning to end, whatever song he was listening to or whatever. Or, you know, he listened to a lot of Jay-Z. And then later on, like J. Cole. But I just remember Jay-Z, pretty much every Jay-Z song he knew word for word from beginning to end of the song. So you would constantly see him with his headphones on, you know, like I said, just rapping all the songs that he enjoyed listening to.
And he did the song with Brian McKnight, I remember, too.
Brian McKnight and the video with Tyra Banks. Mm-hmm. Oh, was that? Yeah, that was Kobe. Yeah, the KODE. The E. Yeah.
I was also curious too, just your view of him as a player all time. Obviously, it's a hot topic, and him as a person.
Well, I'll put it like this. As a player, so you know, I played with Larry Bird, against Magic Johnson, against Michael Jordan. I view Michael Jordan as the best ever to play the game. And I don't think that anyone will ever overtake him in terms of that crown. And if Michael Jordan is the best player ever, and he's the best player at that position, at the two guard position, I think that it's he's number one, and I think that Kobe is 1A behind Michael Jordan. When you look at the tenacity that he played with, what he, you know, when he first came in the league, he didn't start, he didn't play very much the first year or two. And that fueled his fire, and for him to be able to accomplish what he was able to accomplish, and play as long as he was able to play, win the championships that he was able to win with Shaq, without Shaq, you know, with a whole new cast of characters, what he brought to the USA Olympic team, when he participated, you know, with that group, and just overall that killer instinct, you know, he's in my top five NBA players of all time, I would say, and right below Michael Jordan.
Pretty high praise, and you would know from playing with a lot of great guys. Anything else that sticks out to you about Kobe that people should know about him, and just whether it was him as a person or as a player?
Well, I think just the whole transformation that happened before everybody's eyes. And, you know, I mean, we're all human. None of us are perfect. And seeing him as a young guy coming in, like I said, I played with number 8. I got to coach number 24. And seeing him from a single young man to a married man to a father, and then being able to transition from playing, finding some passion in something else once he was done playing, you know, and putting that energy into his daughter, coaching her team, as well as the business that he was doing for his company, Kobe Inc., that included a lot of different things from video animation projects, where he got awards, you know, to writing books, to some of his speaker series things that he did, you know, going around to corporations and speaking about, you know, just competition and the mindset that you have to have, you know, in any field and things of that nature. Just one of the most well-rounded guys that probably was misunderstood for, you know, a lot of the time. But I love the fact that he didn't care about, you know, for the most part, about what people said or thought about him. And he brought that same tenacious attitude to everything that he did. You know, like you said, whether it was playing checkers, knowing more rap, more lyrics than the next person, definitely anything on the basketball court. And then, like I said, just transforming and transitioning to the basketball afterlife. You know, so that's just nice to have seen. I've been knowing him since, you know, I played against his father. So I met Kobe in 1989. I think he was maybe 11 years old. So we had a long relationship. And like I said, I've got to see him. I got to see him just really, really, you know, at almost every stage of his life and you know, what he was and what he turned into. And so I just always you know, although it was very sad, you know, when I see pictures of him or anything now, it just makes me smile because I feel blessed to have had the time that I had with him and to be able to share the moments that we were able to be, you know, we're able to share and accomplish the things that we were able to accomplish as teammates.
And Brian, last question before you get ready to head to practice with the guys. Just for you, do you remember where you were and how you found out about the news last year when Kobe passed? And just what did you think he could have been if he was still with us? Obviously, you touched on the stuff that he was doing post-retirement.
Yeah, I mean, I remember exactly where I was. I was at NBA TV. And I was 10 minutes away from coming on the set. I was with Stan Van Gundy and Matt Weiner. We had our makeup done, and we're getting ready to walk onto the set. And one of our statisticians came over and said that, you know, he's like, I can't believe this report. TMZ said that Kobe was, you know, killed in the helicopter crash. And it just kind of stunned everybody, and everybody starts scrambling, grabbing their phones and making calls and trying to find out if it was true. And what most people didn't know at the time was that his daughter and the other folks were on that helicopter. You know, they found that out a little bit later, but you know, that I remember the producers at NBA TV asking me, was I sure that I wanted to go on air and you know, and talk about it. And you know, I got very emotional, but I was like, yeah, I want to do this because I want to, you know, put out the message that, you know, I've dealt with a lot of death and dying, and you know, in my life, my family got, you know, passed in a car accident back in 1993, my mother, father, and my sister. And one of the things that got me through it was the fact that while they were alive and here, and present in my life, we did things together and we made memories. And when they're gone, that's all you have are the memories that you made while they were here. And so I wanted to kind of put that message out there to help folks hopefully deal with, you know, with that tragedy at that time. And so, you know, I remember exactly where I was and, you know, how I was feeling and what was going on.
Well, Brian, I certainly appreciate you hopping on the line with us here on the Hoops Hype podcast. I wish you the best of luck as you get ready for the G League bubble with the Ignite and those young guys that you're trying to mentor and coach up. It's good to hear from you. Continued best wishes for you in 2021, my man.
All right, appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
I also want to thank everyone for tuning in. If you want to hear more episodes of the Hoops Hype podcast with guest appearances from players, executives, fellow media members, and coaches such as Brian Shaw, you can like and subscribe to it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. You can also keep up with my tweets on Twitter, at Mike A. Scotto. Until next time, I'm your host, Michael Scotto, wishing you and yours all the best.